Well, my name's Justin Elam, and what I do is I direct adult ministries at North Point Community Church, which is really everything adults do outside the weekend worship service. The other job I have here is I oversee the Starting Point Ministry for all of our campuses. So those are the two jobs I get to do. And I've been here for 9 years, but I didn't grow up here and I didn't start here. I actually grew up in Northern Virginia, right outside Washington, D.C. I went to college in Virginia, and I worked in Virginia at a church in Virginia. So I've got some Northern Virginia folks here. Good. Welcome. I actually worked at a different church, a much different church than North Point. I've served in many different types of churches, much smaller churches. The culture of the churches I grew up in are very different than North Point cultures. And everywhere I've been, I've tried to learn some things that have worked well, and I've seen some challenges we've had to overcome, and that's true everywhere I've been, including North Point. But at every place I've ever served or worked in church world, and I have lots of friends like you do in church world because, you know, once we kind of do this, we have lots of friends who do this too. So everybody I've ever known in church world, like me, we've always had kind of the same thing be true. This has been true everywhere I've been, no matter what the size of church, no matter what church culture, it's true with all my friends in ministry. And that is that everything we're doing rises and falls, the success of it rises and falls on the quantity and quality of our leaders. If there's anything you're doing in ministry that in any way involves volunteers, and groups ministry heavily relies on volunteers, it rises and falls on the quantity and quality of our leaders. This is true everywhere I've ever been. I have never met someone in ministry, I've never had a friend call me and say, you know what, we are so stocked with quality leaders, we don't know what to do. Actually, what we need is some really broken, needy people for our leaders. That's what we could use, right? I've never heard anyone say that. Because all of us have the same need. North Point has the same need. We all are dependent on more and better leaders. And we're all trying to answer the same question. The same question you're here to answer today, that's the question we're all answering. That's the question North Point's trying to answer. And unfortunately, what I can't give you today is the answer. Because North Point hasn't found the answer. There is no silver bullet to this question. Because if there was, we would have all read the book. We'd all be doing it. And we wouldn't need a breakout like this. And when we go to other churches and we visit other churches, the first question we're asking those other churches is, hey, how do you recruit and develop leaders? How do you help them lead more effectively? That's what we're all doing. That's what we're doing as well. So we're learning as well. But the truth is, all of us here at North Point and wherever you're serving, all of us have really good leaders. It's not that we don't have any. We do. We know what they look like. And that's what this guy represents right here. This Top Gun pilot right here, he represents our elite leader. He represents the person that we want leading every group. If we could clone these people, we would have them lead every group. If we could have them lead every group, we'd have them lead every group. When we're working for the church, right, and we invite that neighbor who finally says yes and comes to church, this is the group we put them in, right? Right. We can't do that for everybody, but our friends are going to get in these people's group, right? So we all have some of these, right? But we also, you know, we also have a few of these, right? And sometimes we have more of these than these. So the question we want to answer, what we would like to do is we want to find out, can we take these and make them into these? Are these just born this way, or can we do that in a systematic way? In other words, if we have to handcraft every one of these into one of these, we'll never be able to scale that to our needs, but maybe there's a way to create a system. The good news is this. I think what I've learned in my 9 years at North Point is I think this really is a strength of North Point's. This is something North Point does well. It doesn't do it perfectly. It hasn't solved the problem, but it at least does this better than any place I've worked, any place I've served. And so there is something I think I can share with you that could be helpful. At the very least, even if you listen to this and you're like, man, we're doing it way better than that, that's affirming, and that's worth something too, right? So what I will tell you is I think this is a strength, but there's even better news. The better news is this. If you don't need to have North Point's resources to do this, because there's nothing more frustrating. I've been at smaller churches and I've been attending the conference, and it's like visiting the rich uncle's house, and you're thankful that God builds buildings like this, but yours is not like this and your ministry's not like this. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, yeah, I could be a genius too if I had your budget and your staff, right? I mean, the truth is, it's not that hard to steer a yacht. You know what I mean? It's not. I get that. So the answer to the question this morning cannot be just increase your budget to North Point's budget, right? It just can't be that. So the really good news is you don't have to have North Point's resources to do this, nor do you have to have North Point's groups model to do this. So whatever your context is, whatever your financial situation is, whatever your denomination, whatever your model is, this can work. And I hope that's good news for you. But where we need to start with that is we need to start with this guy. And what we need to do is we need to deconstruct him a little bit and figure out, what does he have? What do these leaders have? What do people like this have that this person doesn't have, right? What do they have? Because that's going to tell us if we can create a system that makes these leaders. So the first thing this guy has, is number one in your outline. He has clarity and simplicity. And why has the polarity on my magnet reversed? There you go. All right. He has clarity and simplicity. But he has clarity and simplicity around two key things, right? And these are the questions that all of us are asking. Whatever role you're playing, whether you're a volunteer at your church and you work for a company, whether you're on a church staff, whatever you're doing, you're asking these questions. I'm asking these questions in my role. And our leaders, or the people we're calling into leadership, are asking these questions as well. And those two questions are, what does success look like and what is my role? What does success look like and what is my role? So if we can give our leaders the gift of clarity around what does success look like and what is our role, we will have taken an enormous step towards developing leaders who lead well. Letter A, in creating increased clarity around success and responsibility is the foundation of effective leadership. Now, let me talk about foundations for a minute. Because, you know, the truth is, when you go visit another church or you go visit another ministry, the thing we're all tempted to focus on, myself included, is not the foundation. Because that's not really the sexy part of anything, right? The foundation is not cool. It's not, when you get a house built, you don't drive your friends by to see your new foundation. Right? It's just a flat gray slab of concrete. It's pretty boring. You only take your friends by when the house is built. So when you're visiting a church and you're looking at their model, the thing you look at, the thing I look at, is the house itself. And what that looks like in groups world or training leaders world is, hey, how do you train your leaders? When do you train them? How many people come? What do you teach them when they come? That's all the house. And those are good questions. But I don't think they're the most helpful questions, in part because those answers for North Point are far more connected to our resources. And so they're less helpful, and they evolve. In the 9 years that I've been here, our training model for leaders has changed 4 or 5 times, just in that 9 years. So if you had come here, right, 2 years ago, our training model would be different than it is today. 2 years before that, different. 2 years before that, different. But you know what hasn't changed? The foundation on which those training models are built. So this is going to seem a little bit removed. It's not going to seem as interesting or sexy maybe at first as what the house looks like or what is specifically. We'll get into some of that. But what I think it could be and should be and is the most helpful is actually talking about foundation. And it's connected to this idea of clarity. So the trainings have evolved, but the foundation has not. Number one, clarity on how you define success reduces frustration and creates greater focus. Clarity around how you define success reduces frustration and creates greater focus. All right, so now let me come to your ministry for a moment. I've moved to your town. I'm at your church or your ministry, and you've gotten up and given your compelling pitch for leadership. And I'm interested. I'm interested in joining. And so on Monday morning, I shoot you an email and I say, hey, that was a great, compelling pitch for leadership. Do me a favor. I'd love you to write in one sentence, what does it look like for me as a leader to win in your ministry? What does success look like? I want you to write that down somewhere in your notes real quick. This isn't something, maybe if you gave it more thought, you clarify, but there's something on the top of your mind. I want you to write that down. If you're here with someone else, don't cheat, because it's important for you to know if there's 4 of you here from a group's ministry, if there's 2 of you, would you say it the same? Would you say it different? But take 15 seconds and do it. And as you're doing it, imagine this. Imagine if all you did, all that was true about your ministry was that whatever you as the leader are writing right now would be clearly articulated by 90% of the people following you right now. Like imagine if they were sitting here and I was asking them, hey, write the sentence that your leader thinks is a win, and they were really close 90% of the time. You can just imagine how effective that would be. And I think it's important to realize that actually, it might not be the how, where, when, and why of training, but that actually can be far more powerful than any of that stuff. And this is kind of getting at what I think is what North Point's advantage is in this area in my experience. It helps leaders know that they're winning because all leaders want to know that. All leaders want to know, what does it look like for me to be successful and to win? And here's what's the problem about what we're doing with that, is we're engaged in ministry. And ministry is a notoriously ambiguous thing to measure, right? Because we're talking about what does it look like for spiritual formation to take place in someone's life? That's a very difficult thing to quantify effectively. So even our definitions of success are compounded by the difficulty of ministry itself being definable. And what happens is when we're unclear, or even worse, when we have a moving target, it can be very frustrating for our leaders. Like, if our leaders don't know what it looks like to win, if we don't, you know this because I know this, when you're in a role and you're not sure what it looks like to be successful, that's very frustrating. When the people we lead aren't sure what it looks like to be successful, they're frustrated. And sometimes it's not that we're just unclear, sometimes the target keeps moving. Now, I used to work for somebody who we would be terrified to send to conferences like this, because they would, whatever the latest idea was, that was the new idea for us. And so we would try to lie to them and throw our bodies in front of any conference, you know, and, you know, the staff would get together and it was like comparing scars from the same battles. Like, oh, remember the missional conference? Remember that? That one was rough, you know? And so it kept changing. And here was the problem that it created in the leadership pool. No leader dug in on what we were doing because they knew in 6 months we could be doing something totally different. Anybody here ever work, if they're sitting next to you, just do this, right? Okay, yeah. All right, so some of you have the same scars, you know what I mean, but that's frustrating. So whatever this clear definition of a win is, it can't be something that keeps shifting because that's very frustrating. So a clear target gives our leaders greater focus. A clear target gives our leader greater focus. I know that's not rocket science, but that's an important thing because that stuff leaks. Even here, we've got to keep going back to that. So what does it look like at North Point? When I'm sitting across from a group leader, what do I tell them to clarify what a win looks like? Well, our overall value as a church is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. So when a leader asks me, well, what does that look like as a group leader? What I tell them is, hey, the win in your group is any movement towards Christ. Any movement towards Christ. That's the win. Now, here's what that does. It does a couple things. One is it helps relieve the burden that a lot of leaders feel, sort of this desire to see this giant spiritual shift in the lives of everyone in their group. But that isn't how God changed my life, and it's not how God changes your life, and most people don't make dramatic spiritual shifts frequently. The way most people change is incrementally, right? I mean, we know that from our lives, we know that from our experience, and sometimes we have to remind leaders that that's the way God works. And so when a leader says, well, what does it look like, any movement towards Christ? Well, you remember when Larry came to your group and it was clear that his wife dragged him there and he had his arms crossed and he never shared and his face told you the whole time, I hate this. You remember that for the first 6 months? And then suddenly Larry, you know, shared his first prayer request. That's not a small thing. That's a huge thing. That's movement towards Christ. Remember that couple that came to your group and their marriage just kind of seemed rocky or on the brink? And then two-thirds of the way through the group, you could tell there'd been a shift. That's movement towards Christ. You remember that guy that came to your group and he was struggling with business trips and the stuff he would struggle with on business trips, and then he started telling you he was getting victory after that Bible study you guys did together? That's movement. What about you? You're the leader. Remember how you told me unqualified you were and how ill-equipped you felt and how you didn't know enough Bible, and yet you're watching God change these lives through your willingness to step forward. All that's movement. So it allows me to celebrate these little steps, which is how God works. So it's a simple sentence that clarifies the win for them. But clarity around success alone is not enough, is it? We have to clarify what their role is. Number two, leaders need to know exactly what they are responsible for. Now, for those of you that work in church, like I do, and for those of you that focus on this, we tend to think about this stuff all the time. We're paid to think about this stuff. So we're constantly thinking about groups. We're talking things about involvement, leaders, training, all that stuff. But for our volunteer group leaders, right, this is about 1/100th of what they think about. Right, they've got so much going on. They've got the business going on. They're trying to make a living. They're trying to serve their family. They've got children's activities. They've got family things. They've got tons of things. And so group is 1/100th of what they think about. The reason that's important for us to remember is when we define what responsibility looks like for our leaders, it really needs to take into account their reality. Because what can happen is if we're not careful, we can shove just a little too much or maybe a lot too much in the responsibility category, and volunteers, leaders don't need a whole lot to go, whoa, that's too much. I don't want to take that on. And that isn't caving to a cultural thing. It's just taking into account reality. And it doesn't take much for leaders, no matter where they are, whether they're here at North Point or your ministry, to go, you know what? I got so much going on. That sounds really cool. I'll get back to you when I have enough bandwidth to do that. And so whatever, and it's not just a time thing, is it? It's also a lot of times a spiritual maturity thing. The way leaders view themselves oftentimes is they don't think they're qualified to lead, right? In fact, those are probably some of our best leaders. Now, there's a category where it's like, yeah, you're right, you're not qualified, you know, don't. But I'm talking about the humble people that are like, you got the wrong guy, I don't know enough Bible, you got the wrong girl, I don't feel spiritually mature enough. You know, it's the ones on the either end, like, you know, yes, I've totally got this, no, I don't, you're not right, and oh yeah, you're right, you're not qualified, right? I'm talking about that middle group, and they don't feel qualified, and the reason is because they know what God knows about them. And they know if we knew what God knew about them, we'd never let them lead. And we know if they knew what God knows about us, they wouldn't let us work for the church. So we're even, right? So the truth is, it's kind of wooing those people, those humble people into leadership. And we have to take into account how they feel. So what does that look like when I'm defining the role for a leader here at North Point? Well, one of the things that we tell them is, we say, look, what you're responsible for is creating environment. God is responsible for life change. You're responsible for creating environment. God's responsible for life change. What that does is, I believe that theologically. I believe that God is the one that changes the human heart. God is the one that changes lives. But also what it does is it communicates to the leader, the burden is not on you to spiritually form Christ in these people, right? Your job is to create a safe, healthy environment where God is free to work. And that is something leaders can ascend to. You know, leaders, yeah, I can do that. I can help do that. The other thing we tell our leaders is, we want you to facilitate a discussion, not teach. Now, if you have the gift of teaching, North Point is one of the most frustrating churches you can possibly attend. We don't have any platforms, really, for teachers. If you're a teacher, you're probably going to want to go to another church. Now, we do have leaders that are gifted in teaching, but they have had to learn and embrace the idea that they have to facilitate with their teaching gift, not teach. So what we tell them is, hey, what we want you to do is facilitate, not teach. Now, what that does is this. First of all, the whole category. Now, there's some people with the gift of teaching, but that isn't by any means the majority of our leader pool. The majority of leader pool isn't teachers, and they don't feel equipped to teach. And here's what we know. You know, we work with people who are competent. Leaders are competent. They want to be viewed as competent. But when we communicate facilitation, it takes the burden of feeling like they need to be a Bible scholar to lead a group. But when they prepare to facilitate, what do they do? They're not going to show up and wing it. They're going to get into the Bible to even facilitate well. So they end up growing anyway in the way we want them to, but we take into account their reality when we define their responsibility to say, hey, you don't have to be a Bible scholar. You don't have to graduate seminary. You can do it. And the right leaders are the ones we have to encourage to do that, but we can set them up for success by doing that. Now, giving our leaders that just those two gifts, clarity around role and clarity around responsibility, are a huge step forward. And when you're clear, it's incredibly powerful. It's true. You've experienced this when you've worked places that were clear and you've experienced the flip side. But when you add simplicity to that equation, now you have nuclear power, right? So let's look at that for a second. Look at this formula here. Clarity plus simplicity equals transferability. Now, why is this important? Because when you add simplicity to clarity, now you have something that can stick in the minds of your leaders and they can carry with them. So that what you need and what I need is a definition of success and a definition of responsibility that isn't something they're going to forget as soon as they walk out of the training. And in order to do that, in order for them to sit there 2 weeks from, 4 weeks from, 4 months from the training and remember what success looks like, it has to be transferable. And in order to be transferable, it has to be simple. So many of you work in the marketplace, or even if you don't, you had, or even if you work in church, something that's been very popular in all organizations for at least the last couple decades is this crafting of mission statements, right? Lots of organizations, your church probably has a mission statement, or the place you work has a mission statement. This has been a very popular thing. Now, mission statements are very valuable because they frame the target for the entire organization. So what happens is, it's not something you produce cavalier, it's not something you throw together. Usually consultants are hired, money is spent, and the leadership of the organization spends a ton of time crafting it. So clarity is a premium. Now, I want to read you two company mission statements, both of these companies you've heard of, and they both hit the clarity mark. One of them hits clarity and simplicity, and just listen and you'll see and feel the difference. This is company number one. Listen to this mission statement. Guided by relentless focus on our five imperatives, we will constantly strive to implement the critical initiatives required to achieve our vision. In doing this, we will deliver operational excellence in every corner of the company and meet or exceed our commitments to the many constituencies we serve. All our long-term strategies and short-term actions will be molded by a set of core values that are shared by each and every associate. Now, the thing is, the people that crafted that statement, you can tell, they parsed every single word. Thoroughness and clarity were clearly a value, right? So, listen to this other company, Fortune 500 company, to be America's best-run, most profitable automotive retailer. To be America's best-run, most profitable automotive retailer. Now, if we were at the company gathering, and this was the unveiling, and we all had our piece of cake, and the balloons had just dropped, right? And I revealed that, which of the two groups of employees do you feel like walked out of that meeting and can actually remember what was said, right? You can just see the power of transferability. And if we can give that to our leaders, that's huge. Letter B, simplicity increases the quality through common language. Now, how does this work? Simple, clear ideas, when you start to build a sort of dictionary around your ministry of these simple, clear ideas, it actually starts to form a common language. And it turns out a common language is an actually critical component to what we're trying to do. And we're trying to create more of these, right? So we need to build a culture that manufactures these. And the way we do that actually is formed by this common language. Listen to this quote from a sociologist. A common language is often the most obvious outward sign that people share a common culture. For this reason, groups seeking to mobilize their members. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. We're trying to mobilize our members into leadership or more effective leadership, often insist on their own distinct language. Now, no matter what culture you grew up in, you have a language that frames that culture. And I'm not just talking about the English language here in the States. There's language that shapes our culture that comes from our Declaration of Independence. It comes from our Constitution. We have values in our culture like freedom and democracy and these types of things. Those are all cultural shorthands that were created that frame who we think we are as Americans or citizens of this country. No matter what country you grew up in, you have that sort of framing culture. And there's even subcultures within cultures that have their own language. Like in our house right now, we're raising our very first teenager, and I'm watching sort of the subculture of adolescence and their sort of language, and I'm actually seeing firsthand just how much communication in adolescence now is through texting, right? And we all text, but it's becoming an art form, right, in this younger generation. So all of you recognize this sort of cultural shorthand, right? So let's kind of do this together. What's the first one? Laugh out loud, easy. What's the next one? Be right back. What's the last one? Okay, what about this one? Yeah, you hesitated because, I don't know what you guys are thinking. This is a church, folks. It's see ya. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why you guys hung up there. I'm a little bit worried about this group. That's kind of mean, I'm sorry. All right, number one, common language. North Point has a common language. So just like adolescents have a common language, your church actually has a common language, whether you've been intentional or not. And North Point also has this common language that creates the culture. Look at this. Okay, so at the highest level, lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. That's our corporate mission statement. Now, our strategy. How have we reduced our strategy of moving people into groups into this clear, simple phrase? Circles are better than rows. Circles are better than rows. That's what we say. It's our clear, simple shorthand for that idea. The win, any movement towards Christ, the role, we create environments, God changes lives. And then we have a set of essentials I'm going to talk about in just a minute. One of those is promote participation. These are the things that frame the group. So let's go to number two here. Shared culture creates consistency and raises standards. So I mentioned these essentials. So we have this list of essentials that kind of frame exactly what we think groups, healthy groups, look like. So here's the list of essentials. This is the foundation of what we feel like makes groups effective. I want you to think of it like this. Imagine an airplane, right? And there's certain gauges on the dashboard of that airplane that tell you if the flight is going well, right? You have altitude, you have airspeed, you have fuel. So if you think of a group experience like an airplane, right? Like the flight is the group experience. This is our dashboard. These are the gauges we look at to determine, is the group flying correctly? Now, you don't even have to be in the group to be able to gauge this. Just like if those of you, any of you are pilots here, some pilots can get an instrument rating, which means you can actually fly and land the plane without seeing outside the plane. You can just fly it on the instruments. So where this provides consistency is like, imagine a flight. So here I mentioned promote participation, right? So what you want in your flight and what I want in my flight is a nice smooth takeoff, a nice smooth flight, a nice smooth landing. It's why we get on a plane a second and third time, right? Now, what we want in our group experience is a nice smooth takeoff, a nice smooth flight, and a nice smooth landing. So here's one of our gauges, promote participation. So here, it's going well. The leaders are letting other people speak in. We tell our leaders, you should not be hearing your voice the most. It helps kind of ratchet in those teachers, but also it helps promote engagement in the other group members because they're hearing their voice. So that's going well. So here I am as a director, and I see a group functioning very in a healthy way, and I know they're doing this very well. Now, imagine another group, and people are leaving. I'm not in the group. I don't have a window into the group. I don't sit there, so I'm not sure what's wrong. But something's wrong. So this is a different flight. This flight is a little bit rocky. Some people are leaving, there's something wrong, and I'm sitting there as a director. I don't even have to be in the group to begin taking the temperature of what might be going right or wrong. And it turns out, in this group, the leader decided to kind of do a full survey of the minor prophets in the original Hebrew, and something's breaking down, some people are leaving, surprise. And so I'm able to talk to them, hey, are you promoting participation? So what I do as a director, what directors do, is they use those gauges, those essentials, to kind of gauge how the health of the flight is. Now, what that gives you is a set of standards. And you can raise standards when you have standards. And so that's what the essentials give us. They establish standards that we can raise. Another thing these help you with, I know a question a lot of people ask is, well, what do you train? Because there's an unbelievable array of things we can train leaders with. How do you train leaders? Well, one of the ways you can train leaders is you can frame them around these essentials. So let's look at that same list of essentials and let's break them up over a normal life cycle of a group. Two of those essentials are probably make the most relevant sense in the first third of the group. Four of them are kind of midway in the group, and two of them end the group well. So that just kind of works out nice for us. But what happens here is when you want to train your leaders, if all you did was not look around and say, hey, what's the training? What is everyone else doing? If all you did was establish your version of these eight things or whatever your number is, whether it's nine or seven or six or whatever, if you established this for your ministry and then just cycled your training through it, I mean, you could just do angles of these eight things for 5 years and be great. Or you could break up your leaders and say, okay, all the ones that are launching, we're going to do a training on these first couple things. The ones that are kind of midway, we're going to train them around these. Either way, you can train all the leaders, you can train some of them, but this kind of helps you answer the training question. And we do a lot of our training through this grid. And when we want to depart and do something creative and different, we do. But this is something that we reinforce through our training, which is a huge help. Now, before we leave this, and I spent most of my time on this first part because I think this is actually the foundational stuff. It's really the secret sauce, I think, and it's the most important. But there's two things that are really critical about this. One is this idea of ownership. What can happen sometimes is all of you are very busy. Most of you, even if you do groups, you don't get to do groups as your full-time thing. It's one of five things you're asked to do. And that's really tough. That's a much tougher situation than I have. And so what's sometimes easy to do is to say, look, North Point has all these resources dedicated to groups. Let's just adopt what they're thinking. I mean, they've done all the thinking. We can just do it. I can understand that. I would be tempted to do that. Here's why, over experience, I can tell you that doesn't tend to work. Because there needs to be a level of ownership for it to really make sense. And the good news is the North Point words aren't the right words. They're not the magic words. They're not the biblical words. They're our words. But we've done a ton of thinking about these. In fact, we used to have six essentials when I first started here. And then about 5 or 6 years in, we decided to revisit them because we had gone a long time. There'd been a lot of new staff, and a lot of the staff wasn't here, like myself, even at the creation of the first six essentials. So we went in and actually started working on our foundation. And it was a painful process. I mean, hours and hours and hours. And I mean, honestly, I wanted to choke people. There were times we were like, I don't care. I don't even care what they are. Just do it, whatever. But you know what? You know what? Our boss, Bill, the reason he allowed that to take so long and go through it, he knew something very important that I think all of us realized at the end of the process was all of that blood, sweat, and tears was necessary for us to truly own the values. And that's what I think if you will take the time, and it doesn't have an immediate payoff, it doesn't help you with the training next month you're doing, but if you will take the time to sweat through this with the core stakeholders in your ministry, I'm telling you, over the long term, it will pay the biggest dividends with leadership. But there has to be sweat equity in it for you. And the good news is, a lot of you like to create anyway, so you get to come up with your own terms and do all that. The second part of that is not just ownership, but perseverance. It can't be something, it has to be something that you're willing to live with for at least 5 years, I think. Like when we finished the essentials process, one of the reasons we took so long was because we knew whatever the answer to this question is, it can't really change for us for 5 years. And I think those two things, ownership and perseverance, are key for establishing your leadership language. So clarity and simplicity are foundational, but they're not the only ingredient this person has. Numeral two, they are encouraged, they're systematically encouraged and equipped. They're systematically encouraged and equipped to thrive over the long term. Letter A, regular encouragement must be part of any leadership development system. What we know doing adult ministry, doing groups ministry, what all of us know together is this. One of the easiest things to do in ministry, it's not the least expensive, but one of the easiest things to do in ministry is the Sunday morning service. I mean, it's easy because you can play some songs, you can preach a sermon, but it's one way, there's no mess. You come and sit, I don't know the mess you're dealing with, you don't know the mess I'm dealing with, I get to tell you something, you go home, I go home, and that's the end of it. But in groups world, if you and I were in group together, I mean, today, you know, whatever you think, it's gonna, hey, we got an hour together, and then we're done, you don't know my stuff, I don't know your stuff, we're fine. We're sitting in a circle together for 2 years, I'm gonna get pretty annoying, and so are you. Right? And that's just the mess of ministry. It's not that groups ministry is always hard, but the truth is, it's the blue collar work of ministry. And it's the least publicly celebrated, right? What do we tend to celebrate? All of us, the public gifts, right? But what our leaders are doing and what we are doing in groups is we're rolling up our sleeves, we're getting into people's mess, we're dealing with their marriage, we're dealing with their baggage, we're dealing with our baggage, and it's all rubbing against each other, and it's just hard sometimes. And that's not just an us issue. That's not just an us issue. This has been true of the church all along. That's why Paul had to write verses like, do not become weary. Because he knew ministry over time can be wearying. That's why Paul wrote, encourage one another. Because Paul could see and Paul knew we have to encourage one another. So encouragement is a non-negotiable for leader health. Now, some of you are gifted in this area. And we can't have enough of you in our ministry. Some of you, you're like, yeah, this isn't hard at all. Aren't we all doing this? And the answer is no, we're not. And that's because we're not all gifted like you. And if you're gifted in encouragement, this flows naturally. But if you're like me, I'm not. And so it has to become a system for me. And it has to become something that I program in. It's not something that'll ever occur to me naturally. Even though I love my leaders and I want them to be encouraged, I'll forget to tell them. And so I use technology to remind me to write notes on Monday morning. And if I see something, I'll shoot myself an email and say, don't forget to write a note to Judy. Don't forget to write a note to Sam. Don't forget to write a note. And I try to write handwritten notes. I try to write three on Monday morning. And that has to be a discipline for me because I'm just not that good at it naturally. So whatever your system is, that's the system you need to develop. And I will tell you this. Across the board, we have, you know, many groups directors at our campuses who lead leaders. But the most beloved, most effective group directors are the ones that are the best at this. In a minute, when we do Q&A, you're going to meet Elaine Scott. And Elaine Scott is probably, if not, our most beloved women's director in our entire system. And Elaine is outstanding at encouragement. And that's the people that are the best at this are the people that are most effective with their leaders. So for many of us, it needs to be a system. Letter B, effective training is both personal and customized. Personal and customized. Here's what I mean about personal. When I first was hired let me step back for a second. What we can do inadvertently in the speed and pace of ministry is we've got a lot going on, and when we see our leaders, a lot of time what's on top of mind for us is how's the group doing or how's that thing I've asked you to do going. And so we can start to regularly communicate to them, not on purpose, and none of us believe this, but what it can come across like is your value to me is what you do for me. Right? We can accidentally communicate. It's like if the last 10 times we talk to this person, we ask, hey, did you get that guy to shut up? Or hey, did you guys end up meeting? Or what are you studying? You know, it's like, oh, I see. Your interest in me is directly connected to what I do for you. And none of us believe that, but we can do that. I can do that. We can all do that. So when I first started working at North Point, and I had 80 leaders that I had to oversee, what I was taught was the very first question I always was to lead with when I met leaders one-on-one was, how are you doing? How is your life? How is your marriage? How is your family? How is that job search going? How is this going? How is that going? And I was always taught to lead the discussion with that question. And it became a discipline that allowed me, that checked me up from wanting to get to business. And for people like me who are more prone to get to that, it was really helpful. And what ended up happening was many times, the 90% of the leader meeting was not about the group, it was about that person. But what it communicates is, when we do that, is that I am for you as a follower of Christ. I am just as much your partner in your spiritual journey as I am your partner in supporting what we're doing in ministry. And I think that's really, really critical that we don't accidentally remove that component. And for some of you, that's a normal relational flow of things. For others of you that are more results-oriented, that's a discipline. But either way, it's absolutely critical. Now, customized. What does that mean? Well, we know what you know, which is, because we're all this way, adults learn on a need-to-know basis. So one thing that's been true, when you saw all those different training houses kind of get built and deconstructed and built and deconstructed, one of the things I can say about our training system here at North Point is it has consistently evolved to greater customization. And we've always had the resources, or not always, but when we transitioned to hiring full-time directors, we've always had the real resources to be able to customize through our one-on-ones. So you can imagine, you can really customize training when you're meeting one-on-one with leaders. On top of that, we've moved away from the more corporate trainings like this. We do some of that, but not much. And we've moved more towards building an online module-based system that we're testing out right now that's sort of a companion piece to the one-on-one. So you can watch modules online, and then you can go to your one-on-one and either watch it together there or talk about it. So as you can see, that's a very resource-dependent ability. To build your own web-based training system, it takes a lot of resources. So that's not terribly helpful unless we can give it away, which hopefully someday we can, but right now we're testing it. So, but the point here is this. Over the years, the 9 years I've been here, every new version of the training house we built has been more and more customized. And our experience in that process, and so how, you know, doing that in your context, you can be creative about that and sort of figuring out, hey, can I break up into groups? I don't think it's an unlimited solution set. Like, I don't think it needs to be like, oh, we're not going to be able to hire directors, so how do we customize training? I really think you can boil down leadership, group leadership, into some core essentials and customize around those. I don't think it has to be 100 things. I think it can be the top 5 things. But I think it's realizing if we get a whole group of leaders in a room like this and they're at all different places, the broader the audience, the more generic the training. If this third of the audience is getting ready to end their group, this third of the audience is in the middle of the group, this third of the audience is just getting started, your needs are different. And so if I'm going to train you all at the same time, I've got to kind of come up to a Jesus works in groups, right? Amen. Let's go home, right? But if I'm talking to this group, see, I can just customize in 3 ways. If I'm talking to this group, I can say, here's how to start well. If I'm talking to this group, I'm going, here's how to get the energy going again in mid-cycle. And if I'm talking to this group, I can say, here's how to end well. Here's how to end strategically. And so I don't think customization needs to be wildly different, but I think it can be just even 3 things like that. But it's important. Now, what we've learned is not all training is created equal, and here's why. Because just like any skill adults learned, any skill you've ever learned, there's a learning curve associated with group leadership. Any skill you've learned, you've started as a novice, you had some sort of learning curve, long or short, but over time you reached a place of mastery. Not that you were ever done, but you started to plateau. Group facilitation is just like that. And what we found is our group leaders are most hungry, most teachable, most afraid of screwing people up in the beginning when they're first leading. And so when we emphasize training, it's in that first 6-month window because that's the best time. So if you're wondering, I don't have unlimited bandwidth, I've got to focus and target my training somewhere, what I would encourage you to do is build something effective for launch. Because if you can launch groups well, the chances of them staying healthy are much better. If they launch wobbly, they get worse. And we've experienced that many times. So when we went to build this online system, we had to make some editorial choices because we couldn't afford to build it all at once. And everyone unanimously said, build the launch section first, because that was the most important. So if you have one place to focus on that first 6 months. Here's our last ingredient. Leaders need freedom and trust in order to reach their potential. Accountability is important, Control is demotivating. Letter A, accountability is important. Control is demotivating. Now, if we paint the two extremes in groups ministry, on the one end, we have chaos, right? Chaos is every leader doing what's right in his own mind. And this is illustrated by a good friend of mine from college who's in a church. Groups is one of five things that he does, which is hard for him. But I was talking to him on the phone the other day, and I said, you know, hey, how's it going? How many groups do you have? And he's like, I've got 90 groups. I'm like, that's fantastic. You know, what are they studying? When do they meet? He's like, I have no idea. I don't know when they meet. I don't know when they're studying. I don't know if they're sacrificing burnt offerings in their living room. I have no idea. Now, he's not proud of that. He hates that. But that's chaos, right? The other side of that equation is control, big brother, the police state, right? This is kind of the world I grew up in. We weren't quite sure that if we left you alone too long in your living room with the Bible, that you weren't going to spawn a false religion in your living room. And so we kind of like put you through a little bit of the ringer in order to lead. Consequently, we had a leader problem. You know, go figure. Now, this is what control can feel like in leadership, all right? And this is what it can feel like for group leaders who are living in a controlling system. They're sitting there and they're thinking, you're letting me sit in the cab, and I am holding a steering wheel, but it never goes down the candy aisle when I want it to, right? So this is what a group leader can feel like in a controlling system. Here's the problem. Because it's a tension we feel. When you are the leader in the church, after all, the scriptures tell us to guard what has been entrusted to us. There is an aspect of what we do that is to protect the faith. That's a real thing. But sometimes what we can do is we can create an environment in a right spirit. We can create an environment that's too controlling, and it begins to stifle something. Because control does give us something. And the truth is, control gives something to us, the leaders, that's much more helpful. And that's compliance. Daniel Pink wrote a book called Drive. It's about human motivation. It's a great book. I'd encourage you to read it. If you don't have time to read the book, I would go out and watch the talk on TED.com. He did a 20-minute version of his research, and he talks about this. If you like the talk, then you can get the book. But one of the things he talks about is this control and how it affects motivation. Here's a quote that he said. Control leads to compliance. Autonomy leads to engagement. Control leads to compliance. Autonomy leads to engagement. So what that means is this. What we want is we want leaders who are free and healthy and happy. And when they have that freedom, that trust that we put in them, they engage in the process. Now, we lose something in that process, but they gain some engagement in that process. We lose a little bit of compliance. So what we're looking for is this thing, healthy autonomy. Healthy autonomy. Forgot to put this. Where's my last? Where are you? You're gone. All right, so, all right, breakdown. See, now, don't you feel good? Whenever you're at a conference, you're like, see, North Point doesn't always work. Welcome to my ministry, you know what I mean? So, anyway, I hope that made you feel better. All right, so healthy autonomy. Here's what healthy autonomy looks like, right? Healthy autonomy is like, it's not unlimited freedom. You're not going to run out to the parking lot. There's someone here to make sure you're in bounds, but you're a part of the process, right? And that's what healthy autonomy gives you. And there's some bonuses that come with it. Look at this formula. Trust plus freedom with accountability equals an ownership mindset. Now, healthy autonomy is the first half of that equation. And an ownership mindset is what you want and I want. If you and I owned a company, what we would want is we would want the employees of that company not to feel like employees, but to feel like co-owners. Because co-owners treat the business differently, don't they? So what we want in group leaders is we want co-owners in ministry. We don't want employees, we want co-owners. And ownership comes when there's trust plus freedom with accountability. So what does North Point accountability look like? Well, when I'm sitting down in a one-on-one, when Elaine's sitting down in a one-on-one and we're talking to leaders, we're asking them about their personal lives. That's because we're interested, we want them to feel a part, but it's also because we want to know, is there something going on in your life that means you need to take a break from leadership? Because sometimes leaders go through moral struggles and things, and we want to find out, is your moral integrity still intact at the level that's appropriate to be able to lead a group? So we're accountability about their personal life. We're asking them questions about the essentials. Are you leading your group in the way we've all agreed upon is the way we've decided to lead group? And that's around the essentials. Now, we may not use the essential language when we talk to them, but we're going to ask questions. Are you promoting participation? Are you serving together? All of that. And then lastly, what are you studying? We want to know that. We give them the freedom to choose, but we want to know what it is, and we ask them about that. How's that working? How's that going? But for us here at North Point, an ownership mindset is not just a nice thing. It's not a semantic. It's an absolute necessity. The reason is because this church is so large, Andy will never be able to meet the pastoral needs of this church. This church has so many people that people like myself and Elaine, who are pastors on staff, will never be able to meet the needs of even the people, the full pastoral needs of even the people we oversee. So what we tell our leaders is we believe that you are the pastors of our church. That isn't just a feel-good saying to us. That is a reality. But in order for that to be a reality, they have to feel like co-owners. And they do. And that's one of the things that amazes me about leadership at North Point is many times when there's a an emergency or somebody goes to the hospital or something's wrong, the leaders do not call myself or Lane or the pastors. They just take care of it. Now, they don't feel like they're on an island, like, hey, there's no use calling him. He's never going to pick up and he's not help. But they only call us when the need reaches a place they don't feel like they can take care of. We find out after the fact that the whole group went to the hospital, the whole group's taken care of, and that's the ownership mindset that is the benefit of trust and freedom. Letter B, when you trust your system, you can trust your leaders. When you trust your system, you can trust your leaders. A lot of times, we're tempted to blame people, not systems. And what can happen is, this was really true of the church I grew up in, we just didn't have a good system for accountability, so we didn't trust people. And when I first came to North Point, and I saw how North Point deputized leaders, honestly, I thought it was pretty reckless. Now, I didn't say that. I wanted to get paid. But I thought, this is reckless. The truth was, what I learned over time was, the reason it felt reckless to me was because I came from a world that didn't have a healthy system of accountability, so we couldn't trust. But here, we have a great system for accountability. Consequently, we can trust leaders a lot more. So when you trust your system, you can trust your leaders. Letter C, developing effective leaders, last thing, needs to take into account the diversity of their personalities. The diversity of their personalities. Now, we did a training here not too long ago that really talked about personality. Some of you have been through personality theory things. You know whatever alphabet soup you are in Myers-Briggs. You know you're a beaver, otter, lion mix. You know you're a melancholy with a hint of sanguine. You know what you are, right? We did a training around personality theory and how it affects leadership, but we used a color system we found, which is a much quicker way to get people's head around where they're coming from. So, and I just want to tell you, if you will email that address, I know some of you came here and you're like, this is all great, it's a lot of work, it takes a long time, I have a training in a month, and I understand that. So what I'm going to do is if you'll email that address, we're going to send you the training we did. We're going to send you the slides, we're going to send you the outline, I'll send you the speaker notes, I'll send you even an audio copy of the training so you can listen to someone do it. And so you can, the worst thing that happened for you today is you got a free training that we did that you can use. So hopefully it's around this. But I want to talk about it as we close. So all of us sitting in here are predominantly one of these. We all might have a mixture of some of these, but one of these is predominantly who we are. And we lead our ministries this way, and we tend to see our effective leaders through our lens. So if you are in the powerful red category, you're a decisive, gets result person, I can tell you if I asked you who are your best leaders, they're like, they're decisive, get results people. It's like, interesting, just like you. So, right? So that's how we see the world. But the truth is, God didn't make the body that way. 1 Corinthians 12 tells us he diversified the body. Now, that's very frustrating because all of us see the world through our lens. We think, wouldn't the world be a better place if we were all one thing, right? If you were all like me, we would never fight. So we all tend to drift that way, but the truth is God did this on purpose, and it's a good thing. And our leaders are like this, and it's important that we know how they lead. So if we go quickly through, the powerful reds, very decisive in groups, there's a lot of accountability there. People kind of go through studies, and there's a high standard of actually applying what we're learning. And those are those leaders, right? But what happens in those groups, the problems that you end up having is they bulldoze sensitive people. You know, they're like, why can't you get with the program? You know, and then the leaders that lead from the yellow quadrant, lots of fun, very social. Everybody enjoys going to the group. The icebreakers are amazing, right? Problem is, right, 2 hours are gone and we haven't finished the icebreaker, right? It's like we actually need to open the Bible at some point, right? So the green folks, very kind, very accepting, very loving. Everybody kind of gets along in their group. That's kind of a problem because they never confront anything in the group. So everything's like, oh, no, that's a little, that makes that person feel uncomfortable. No more of that, right? So everything's kind of, you know, it's like you got to make them comfortable with conflict. And the blues, well, they can get through a curriculum like you would not believe. In fact, if the Holy Spirit told them we need to depart from the curriculum, they would say, I'm sorry, that's not in the curriculum, right? So they lack some spontaneity and they can be very hard to please. But if you are the type of person that likes people to get through the curriculum, they will do it for you. So here's the important part to learn about this. Our leaders are all over this map. And it helps us help them know what they're good at and what they need to work on. But it also, when you have people who are free to be themselves, what they start to do is when they're co-owners with you, they begin to innovate your group system in ways you can't. Because you are limited primarily to the innovation that comes from whatever quadrant you're strongest in. We need the other three to make it fully holistic. But when you make people feel like they're less than because they're not like you, and we just all tend to do that because we see the world a certain way, we never get at that innovation. So that's one huge thing to help leaders feel freedom and trust. So let me just close with this. What I just shared with you today, I know it's not the how, when, and what of the North Point training, but what I believe is that what I shared with you today really is what I've learned in the 9 years that I've worked here, is what North Point's advantage is. It's not tied to the money. It's not tied to the model. It really is that foundational set of things, those three ingredients, and practice simply, clearly, and over again. And that's what helps create not just a handcrafted system, but a whole crop of these people. Because what happens is, when I sit down with future leaders, and let's face it, your best future leaders, just like mine, are sitting in groups right now. And when they have a consistent experience that they see modeled, and then they come and sit with me and I cast vision around what groups is, I'm not telling them something they haven't experienced. They're already halfway there because they've lived what I'm talking about. It sounds familiar to them because it's what they've experienced. And I will tell you, that's what I think allows North Point to get more leaders than any place I've worked. So I know it's not easy. This is not a quick payoff. It's not going to help you with next month's training. But I can tell you this. If you will take the time to work on this and sweat the blood and tears to do it, I will think that a year from now, 2 years from now, you will have a system that creates leaders who lead well, not just a training that did it one time. Let me pray for you, and as I do, Bill and Elaine are going to come up. Lord, thanks for this time this morning with my friends. Thanks for what each and every one of these people is doing, and we're just so grateful that you're building your kingdom all over, everywhere, and that these are folks that have stepped forward to say, Lord, I'm available, I'll help. And that not only that, but they're people who have said, Lord, help me learn, help me become better. And they're humble and teachable, and I'm thankful for that. And Lord, I just want to ask, we're not about learning these principles and practicing them to grow our ministry and make it bigger, but what's at stake here is lives. What's at stake here is actual human beings who need you, who need to experience your freedom, and they need to do it in the circles and the ministries that are represented here. And Lord, I pray that if there's something today that would help these folks be more effective in what they're doing, that you would impress upon them through your Spirit what that is, and that you would give them both the perseverance and the courage to act on that. And Lord, I just want to thank you for them and ask you to bless them in Jesus' name. Amen.